I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. Because of the length of the interview today, a very abbreviated form of Dr. Pai's impressive bio will be presented. Additional information is available at holistichealthshow.com. Dr. Sunil Pai is board certified in holistic integrated medicine and family medicine and was a fellow of the program in integrative medicine at the University of Arizona, directed by Dr. Andrew Wild. He is certified by Dr. Deepak Chopra as a bimodal sound meditation instructor and a creative healing Ayurvedic lifestyle instructor. He has many other certificates. Dr. Pai is vice president of the Neuroacupuncture Institute, a nonprofit organization focusing on teaching physicians neuroacupuncture for pain conditions and neurological dysfunctions such as stroke, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, and traumatic brain injury. He is also certified in plant-based nutrition and teaches patients about the health benefits of eating whole food plant-based diets. He is also a deacon of the House of San Giovanni Integrative Medicine Health and Lifestyle Center, a nonprofit organization that provides full-service health education and integrative medical services with emphasis on indigenous and natural medicine. San Giovanni is certified by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine as an educational alliance partner for delivering evidence-based clinical plant-based nutritional programs. Dr. Pai specializes in custom formulation of dietary supplements, including vitamins, minerals, Ayurvedic herbs, medical food, and homeopathics using safe, clinically effective ingredients. He has been a consultant to various nutraceutical companies as well as functional medicine testing companies. He has become internationally recognized by his San Gervantes flagstone product, Bosmeric SR, the strongest natural supplement for pain and inflammation support available worldwide. Dr. Pai's recent release, his critical acclaim book, An Inflammation Nation, The Definitive 10-Step Guide to Preventing, Treating, and Reversing All Diseases Through Diet, Lifestyle, and the Use of Natural Inflammatories. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Pai, and I look forward to hearing about inflammation. Now first, can you tell us why you wrote your latest best-selling book, Inflammation Nation?
Sure. First of all, I want to thank you and the listeners for having me on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of the first formally trained integrative medicine physicians in the country. I was trained with Dr. Andrew Wall over 16 years ago, and I spent my career exploring thousands of patients' diets and lifestyle and environments and their mental states, and I was trying to figure out what was the underlying, you know, factor that was related to all these situations and conditions. And what I came up with, which is now what all biomedical sciences has been showing over the last 10 years, is that all of these conditions have an inflammatory component.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, what we understand now is that inflammation is the underlying triggering mechanism which makes every disease system worse.
And what is inflammation in simple terms, and why do you consider it the triggering mechanism that makes most diseases, including cancer, worse?
Sure. So for the listeners, you know, inflammation is derived from the word flam or fire, and basically it means the word itis, I-T-I-S. So anything that we have a word and then we put I-T-S after that just means inflammation of that area. So I'll just start from like head to toe, and I usually do this when I give lectures on stage, and I show people, okay, you know, we have red eyes, we call it conjunctivitis. You have runny nose, we call it rhinitis. You have sinusitis. You know, we brush our teeth to prevent gingivitis. We can have a sore throat, pharyngitis, or laryngitis. People have respiratory issues, we call it bronchitis. People can have heartburn and reflux, and we call it esophagitis and stomach pains, gastritis. many people in the United States have colitis, you know, inflammation of the colon. We have then prostatitis in men and vaginitis in women and tendonitis and bursitis and, you know, mm-hmm. you know, there's almost about 200 different itises now in the, you know, medical system. But we tend to forget is what's the underlying triggering cause of those inflammatory conditions. And thus, the conventional approach, unfortunately, sometimes just focuses on treating symptoms. So we give eye drops for the eyes, you know, nasal sprays, we give oral care, we take thyroid hormones for the thyroiditis, we take inhalers for the bronchitis, we take, you know, stomach pills for the top of the stomach or bottom pills for the bottom of the GI tract, we put topical creams, for example, but we're never looking at what's the underlying trigger, and that triggers inflammation.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the triggers of inflammation?
So when we look at the triggers of inflammation, in my book, I actually have I show a picture of a wheel, and I describe there's a variety. The first and foremost largest exposure of inflammation that we get is through the standard American diet.
Mm-hmm.
It's eating a lot of pro-inflammatory foods, which I'll talk about in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have other important factors, like now what's happening is with more chemicals in the environment, you know, genetically modified organisms, even things like, you know, like fracking and the chemicals that people are using on their body with cosmetics, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have to look at tobacco use, alcohol use, solar radiation. Stress is a big one right now.
Mm-hmm.
So stress actually triggers inflammation just directly. We can actually measure stressful responses triggering inflammatory reactions like NF-kappa beta in the body just with all their parameters controlled. And then we look at chronic infections like bacteria, viruses, and funguses. So there's a variety of things that trigger inflammation, and it's a combination of all these things. But we first and foremost find the largest contributing factor to the average person in the United States is dietary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how important is our microbiome, and what affects it both negatively and positively?
So the microbiome, you know, you probably, you know, you've been around for a long time. You know, we used to call this when I was in medical school leaky gut,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now the conventional system has kind of jumped into the game, understandably from learning more about immunology and how the gut functions. But the gut microbiome is just basically is the entry point. In my book, I give a lot of analogies. It's an easy read because I explain, you know, how this is like the TSA officers. It's the first part of entry coming into the airport, and you're getting screened. And your GI tract is full of what we call probiotics. Probiotics are your first line of defense of your immune system. There's about 1,000 species, 100 trillion of those 1,000 species weighing about 3 to 4 pounds. And so when your GI tract is where 80% of your immune system resides, and your immune system, I always give the example of the military. It's the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines,
mm-hmm.
and also the Army Corps of Engineers. They're fighting, they're fixing, and they're repairing, always. Okay, they're defending and repairing. And this is the point of entry. So when we have certain things like certain foods, this is where, you know, conventionally we really, not until recently, started to understand and appreciate how complex the GI tract is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to just say we eat and we poop. It was kind of a very simple kind of concept. And most doctors still, even today, will say, just eat whatever you want and just take this medication.
Right.
But it's more complicated than that. The gut microbiome is how you absorb, you assimilate, and you excrete. And so we have to understand that we have to keep that very strong. And certain things knock that down very, like antibiotics, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So antibiotics, for example, one pill of an antibiotic can cause GI dysfunction up to 18 months later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cancer patients, for example, who have to take chemotherapy, you know, chemotherapy not only kills cancer cells, but it also kills a lot of rapidly turning over cells that are not cancer, and the GI tract is the second most rapidly turning over cell. Every 3 days, your entire GI lining is kind of renewed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why people who take chemotherapy have a lot of diarrhea and cachexia and malabsorption issues, because the chemotherapy knocks that out. So when we create these malabsorption syndromes or dysbiosis, or, you know, you can get candida overgrowth, you can get yeast fungus, you can get parasites, or just malabsorption contributing to nutrient deficiencies, and these cause a host of other problems. So the goal is putting the right type of foods and restoring that GI function so you can, again, fight, fix, and repair better.
Mm-hmm. And would probiotics be one of those things that are positive?
Absolutely. And in my book, actually, I have a section on explaining the benefits of probiotics, but more importantly, how to look and review probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I'm known for nationally and internationally is formulation and manufacturing. And we're actually launching a YouTube channel, which we're going to do evidence-based reviews on dietary supplements and products that are on the internet and in health food stores. Because what I've been doing over the last 16 years is that there seems to be a disconnect. I mean, you will read the research, and I know you do research, and so you'd read the research, and then what we see sometimes with what is given in the health food store on the internet may be something completely different, although they're kind of citing or making leaps and bounds to that research and its efficaciousness. It's not being delivered that way. And so what my goal is always to do is look at and teach all our patients and the people who want to read the book is how they can look at a probiotic. So it's not only understanding that, oh, everybody knows that probiotics are good for you, fermented foods are good for you, the kombuchas and the kimchis and the sauerkrauts, for example, those things are good for you as well. And prebiotics, all the plant fibers are prebiotics that help the probiotics. But more importantly, is understanding 90% right now of generic probiotics that you see on the market are not valid by the time you take it. So there's only 10% of what's on the bottle in the bottle by the time you take the bottle. So what we do is with our manufacturing processes, we guarantee the potency up to 1 year after the expiration date, even at room temperature, making it acid stable. And so people say, why are you so obsessive compulsive about the probiotics? It's because when I have a patient that's gone through chemotherapy for 6 months, their gut is pretty much annihilated in terms of their absorptive capacity and immune capacity. So we really have to take serious of how we rebuild that function.
You know, they used to ship my probiotics on ice.
Right.
And then they stopped doing that. And there was no one that I could find that would ship it on ice anymore.
Yeah, we keep ours cold because, you know, all probiotics, even if they're frozen, if they're freeze-dried, if they're in a pouch or a pill or some kind of, you know, a tinfoil package, you know, it still needs to be kept cold because there's still live bacteria. Now, we usually, how we ensure our potency is that we also put higher amounts. So we actually did degradation studies in temperature and humidity counts so that we can measure how much would it take to keep in that product so that over that year it would still maintain what's on the bottle at the time that you take the bottle.
Great. Good. I'll write down when we get to your website and all of that, I'll write it down and get them there in the future. What type of diet then do you recommend to avoid inflammation and why?
So this is the first step in my book, and it's really about eating an organic, non-GMO, plant-based anti-inflammatory diet. You know, and what people need to understand is that right now the big craze is still the paleo and the ketogenic, and those are just fads. But we, you know, I'm an evidence-based practitioner, so what that means is that everything that we do has evidence and scientific data to back what we talk about and what we explain and what we offer to our patients, and that's clinical outcomes. And so what the data will show, you know, there's large amounts of data, probably thousands of studies, that will show eating a plant-based diet is always more beneficial than eating an animal protein diet. Animal protein diets are high in pro-inflammatory omega-6s, for example. They're high in cholesterol. They have no fiber. They have no phytonutrients and very little antioxidants. My book will explain that because most of us in the United States, when we're taught about diet, we said, okay, you know, here's your protein, which was like a piece of steak or chicken or beef or lamb or whatever. You know, here's some bacon. And then we had some sides. But what people tend to forget and what I educate them is that plants, all plants, legumes, vegetables, and grains, all have protein. So you're never going to get a lack of protein in the standard American diet. The problem is we're not eating enough of the plant foods. And so we want to look at, remember, antioxidants. There's very little antioxidants now in factory-farmed animal protein. So when people have like beef or chicken and pork and all this stuff, you know, now what happens is through factory farming is that all these animals are being fed corn, for example, outside of all other chemicals and things like that, which I explain in my book in detail. But the problem is most people are actually nutrient deficient. So what happens, they have a lot of calories, but they have nutrient deficiency. So when we test them, they're actually low. So that's why most people in America are taking a multivitamin, because they're not even getting their A, their C, their E, just the general antioxidants from animal protein. It's also lacking. Animal protein lacks what we call phytonutrients. And what a phytonutrient is, everything that you see in the health food store, any kind of supplement, whether it's acai, whether it's mangosteen or blueberries or bilberries or green tea or curcumin or ginger or resveratrol. I mean, we see all these things, xanthines, all these things that we see, lutein and lycopenes, for example, these all come from plants. They're phyto, plants, nutrients. And so one thing that I always like to tell my patients and to put things in perspective is that there's not a pill that is given to prevent, reverse, or treat a disease that comes from an animal protein. They only come from plants. Mm-hmm. Right? So even a lot of people say, what about the fish? Isn't that? I go, no, actually that's the fatty acid from the fish. It's not the fish protein that we're giving as an omega-3.
Mm-hmm.
So we just to put that in perspective, you know, and the most important thing that is missing from the animal protein diet is fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And you know more than anybody else that fiber is not just for helping the colon and excretion, but what fiber does is fiber helps bind to the toxins that go through liver. So, for example, hormonal-related cancers in the United States is very, very high. Men and women have estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone-related cancers. But the reason is not that we produce more, is that we don't excrete enough. Okay, so the average American has about 7 to 12 grams of fiber a day. We need about 40.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find is that when we excrete it with fiber, fiber binds to the chemicals that go through the liver, good and bad. Remember, we all get exposure to a variety of chemicals. The body has the ability to detoxify. It binds to the bile in the liver, from the gallbladder to the liver, and then it goes and binds to the fiber from the plant foods. Remember, plants only have fiber. Animal proteins have no fiber. And then it binds to that, and then we excrete it. But if we don't have enough fiber in the diet, then there's something called enterohepatic circulation, which means that these hormones and chemicals actually get reabsorbed into the system. So
mm-hmm.
that's why we have these high predominantly, these types of cancers. Again, not that we're producing more, is that we're not getting enough to excrete in our diet in terms of fiber content.
So
when we look at plants overall, again, plants will be anti-inflammatory mm-hmm. and animal proteins are more pro-inflammatory. We
mm-hmm.
want more omega-3s, less omega-6s. We want more antioxidants, phytonutrients, and fiber, which is lacking on the other side.
Mm-hmm. When I had cancer, the doctor advised a vegan diet, which I went on. And then when I developed AFib about 3 years ago, the literature all indicated that that was the better diet to be on, so I'm on that. But the one thing that I am concerned about, and maybe this is not necessary, is protein. So I take a protein supplement, plant-based, but I find that hemp is the only plant-based powder that is complete.
Well, what we like to do is we like to look at kind of the rainbow effect of foods. So we don't just eat one food group. So, like, for example, when we give, like, we have a plant-based protein. We actually have a few in our practice.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those is made out of seeds. So we not only have the hemp, we put hemp, chia, flax, pumpkin. You know, we use a
mm-hmm.
variety of seeds,
mm-hmm.
sunflower seeds as well. And so we're looking at, you know, creating a variety of the full amino acids and the nutrient contents.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even, you know, to make the counter-argument, when people just get a piece of beef or chicken, it's not fully complete either. In fact, due to the factory farming, there's a lack of almost everything involved.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is that as a vegan or a plant-based person, we do have certain deficiencies, and that's B12, right, because
mm-hmm.
we're not eating the
mm-hmm.
eggs. So we do recommend, you know, a B12 or B-complex to most people. But when I test all my patients, because we do nutrition testing,
mm-hmm.
in 16 years, I have not had a patient who's eating a standard American diet who doesn't have deficiencies of all their vitamins and minerals.
Oh.
So it's very interesting. You know, we always hear, like, oh, well, you're lacking B12. I go, but everybody else is lacking not only B12, but almost everything else as well.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, you're not getting that. But I think that the thing that we have to teach people, and what we do here at House of Sangevity, is we teach people how to eat plant proteins, how to eat enough of that. You know, the biggest challenge that we have is most people, since it was considered a side of their meal, is that they're not eating enough. And so a lot of people will lose weight in the beginning, and for those people who are overweight or have weight to lose, that's important. But for, like, cancer patients, it's very tricky because we want to make sure that we're giving them enough calories and enough nutrients, because a lot of times they're kind of lacking. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to cook. We will help them out. We provide them with books, recipes, videos, websites, and all the materials. So we even have a nutritionist here. We even go shopping with our clients that are local to teach them, and we do cooking classes here. We're even going to have a vegan restaurant, plant-based restaurant, coming soon in our facility. So we're really kind of moving to progression of, like, showing people you can reverse your diseases. You know, we can reverse heart disease. We can reverse diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
these things are lifestyle diseases that can be completely changed and reversed by diet alone. We also can offer natural supplementation that are targeted therapies to help people along the way as well.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have any problems with vegans using the powder?
No, in fact, you know, I'm okay with people using
mm-hmm.
plant
mm-hmm.
protein shakes, because a lot of people, you know, with today's lifestyle, they don't cook
mm-hmm.
enough,
mm-hmm.
or they're on the go, right? Mm-hmm. So getting an extra 20 grams or 15 grams in a mm-hmm. protein smoothie. I always throw like more greens and vegetables. I put more live fruits in there as well. Mm-hmm. Is a great way. I don't mind people quote unquote cheating. I don't look at it as cheating. I look at it as you need to get in your 9 servings of fruits and of vegetables and fruits a day. Mm-hmm. So get it in however I need to get it. As long as I like to tell people when it's a product that comes in a package, try to get as much organic, non-GMO fruits and vegetables as possible, and protein powders as well.
Over the past few years, wheat has been targeted as a big problem, and there have been many books written, and it's considered to be a cause of many health problems. Do you agree with wheat being as bad as they say it is?
Yes and no. I actually have a section in my book, you know, wheat is not all the cause of all illnesses, although there's many books that have been written about that. You know, it was very simple because everybody jumped on the bandwagon first and foremost to say, you know, just, you know, blame the wheat, stop eating wheat. Now, there is some problems with the standard American diet that we're consuming too many highly refined carbohydrates like, you know, foot-long Subway sandwiches and, you know, like, you know, pizzas that are 3 foot long and all you can eat breadsticks. Okay, yes, there's a lot of pull-aparts and donuts. Those are what we call junk refined wheat products, and we shouldn't be eating those to begin with anyways. But a lot of people who jumped on the bandwagon is that if we eliminated the carbohydrates that they would lose weight. And in fact, in the beginning, in the first month or so to 3 months, people will lose weight by eating less donuts and less highly refined carbohydrates. But the problem is you're still lacking then all the nutrients that you're getting from those carbohydrates. So there is good carbohydrates, and we call them bad carbohydrates. And in our office, we like to look at specifically which patients of what foods does each patient have or consume that can trigger a problem. And so those people who actually test positive for a gluten or gliadin sensitivity, absolutely they shouldn't be having the gluten or the gliadin from wheat, but they can still have spelt sorghum, millet, rice, and quinoa, for example. So there's a lot of other grains that we can have. Just, you know, the standard American diet is predominantly wheat-heavy. The other issue is not just the wheat itself and the glutenizing of wheat, which I describe in my book, but it's really the glyphosate that we're finding out, which is sprayed on the wheat. And that's a whole section, and now there's books being written on that, but I document all the research showing that the glyphosate, which is a pesticide, herbicide product, you know, from Monsanto, when it's on the wheat product, it actually causes destruction and disruption. You know, Jeremy Smith from, you know, who's very well known in the GMO world, you know, we'll talk about how the glyphosate, and many people are writing books about this now, how the glyphosate is disrupting the gut microbiome, which then triggers this inflammatory responses in the gut. And we see that definitely in our patients. But we do see even when people move to even an organic, non-GMO, and we restore that function, later on, eventually, they can introduce those foods back from a better source.
I'm glad you mentioned that Monsanto, because I suspected that my gluten sensitivity, especially toward wheat that's developed in the last 2 years, was a result of genetically modified foods. And the reason I suspected that was my friends in Germany send me German cookies a big box at Christmas time every year. And so I don't eat many sweets, but maybe once a month I'll have a cookie. And so the first time I ate one and it was so good, and I thought, I bet that had wheat in it. And I looked and it did, but I had no reaction to that wheat. But if I eat any wheat in this country, I have a reaction.
Yeah, actually about 8 years ago when we started looking at our patients really specifically, because we do the food sensitivity testing. That's our step number two, is looking in our book, is looking at which foods trigger inflammatory responses out of all the food groups. So although we want people to eat more plant foods than animal proteins, for example, and more organic, non-GMO, we still want to look at now how our practice differs than other plant-based practices, is that we look at how then we can look at your specific individual immune response to what may trigger inflammation from a food. So we look at the foods, and we look at all the fruits and vegetables and legumes and grains and animal proteins and plant proteins, and anything that comes back positive we want to remove from the diet. But the gluten and gliadin is very interesting, because we've seen since 1999 the data will correlate directly with all these inflammatory gut problems, all these chronic inflammatory conditions, as we started introducing the GMO foods and also introducing some of these chemicals onto the food production. And so it's not just, you know, the highly refining it, which is a problem, and also, you know, we call the glutenizing of these foods. Yes, there's data to show that's a problem with it. But the universality, which you've mentioned, is absolutely right. It's the chemical exposure. So when I have patients, for example, here in New Mexico, we have a lot of people people who work at the university have a lot of students and also professors who go on sabbatical, or they go learn a language in Europe, for example. Just like you're saying, they go to Germany, they go to France, they go to Spain, they eat the bread, they're positive here on the test, they have horrible symptoms like, you know, colitis issues and psoriasis issues and a lot of arthritis issues. So they're gluten-free here, they go to Europe, they eat the bread, they don't have any symptoms. And the second they land in LaGuardia or LAX, bam, they have the exposure here. It's a problem. And a lot of people were contributing, saying, oh, it's so nice to live in Europe. I go, yeah, it's also nice to live in Europe, too. But it's also that they're you know, Europe as well as like 28 other countries around the world, you know, China, Russia, you know, Australia, Japan, and most of Europe is non-GMO. So we have to look at this correlation of why do we have this rise of increase of celiac disease, gluten sensitivities. It didn't exist even 10 years ago. Now we go to every restaurant, every package. It's like gluten-free, gluten-free, gluten-free menu. But it's not the genetics of the people. It's what has happened to the food. Remember, we've been eating wheat even back to the Paleolithic time, right? Even Jesus broke bread, and everybody is, you know, but all of a sudden, you know, the wheat has become the evil thing, and it's not the wheat itself, it's what we've done to the wheat.
You mentioned the paleo diet, which is a high animal fat diet. What are your thoughts about that? Because this type of diet seems to come back periodically.
It comes back periodically. You know, remember Atkins was back then when I was in medical school, and then, you know, and then he when he passed away, supposedly from heart issues before he hit the ice and hit his head. But really what we look at is that, you know, it's a popular thing to sell because there's industry behind it. So, you know, for example, if I were to write my book and I say, if I were to write a chapter on and recommending more animal protein, there will be actually a lobby group and also bloggers that are paid by lobby groups that will actually push my book to become a New York bestseller overnight. So there's industry involvement of why we see certain things become very popular. And so, but the animal protein is pro-inflammatory, right? So in my book, I clearly describe the differences of what we used to eat in 1950, for example, than what we, you know, eat right now. So in 1950, we used to have an omega-6, which is pro-inflammatory, and omega-3 anti-inflammatory foods in our diet, and that ratio was a 1-to-1, you know, roughly. Okay, so what that meant is that the average person in 1950, we ate beef, we ate chicken, we had pork, we had lamb, we had roast. It was on a Sunday, it was after church, you know, grandma came over, you know, it was a birthday party, or we watched the game, we feasted, and then the rest of the week we famined. Why? Because that food was really expensive. You know, unless you came from the one percenters, the rest of us, 99% in the United States, could not afford that every day. That's why it was on Sunday. It was a big, you know, it was our feast day, it was our celebration day, a thanks day, for example. But now every day is game day. And so a bucket of chicken is not something that's a rare occasion. It's almost a drive-through and every day for $20 for a family of four. And what we see is now that ratio of omega-6s is about a 40-to-1. It's a 40-time ratio to 1. In certain parts of America, we call it the stroke belt, which is Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. I show my book. They have a 70-to-1 ratio. So they not only have, you know, they double deep fry, for example. And so we have to see that, you know, we are an inflammation nation, the title of my book. The foods are more inflammatory. Not only that, it's with factory farming, and I clearly will describe and show the details in my book, you know, the difference between an organic egg, you know, organic egg being a 3-to-1 ratio of inflammation and beef being a 4-to-1 ratio, organic grass-fed finished beef. But now with factory farming, it's a 20-to-1 ratio for eggs and a 24-to-1 ratio for beef. So, you know, it's 6 to 7 times more inflammatory, the food. So it's no longer you are what you eat, it's you are what you eat is eating, is what we have to be concerned about.
That's why I think that it was so great growing up when I grew up, because we grew most of our own fruit and vegetables. They used horse manure, cow manure, maybe, as the fertilizer, and there were no pesticides or growth hormones or any of that.
Sure. I know, and being more plant-based is not that we're against, you know, people do traditional sustainable agriculture and farming, and there's regions of the world that that's what they have to eat, but we have to understand that that's different type of food that they're actually growing, and there's a respect of that whole animal land environment than what we get at the big box store in America, or through a car window and just getting a monster mac of 3 bacon and 5, you know, patties and cheeses and whatnot. There's a little bit of a disconnect of where that food is coming from, and my book will clearly define each of the food groups, interesting enough, what is kind of secretly being hidden. I uncover the truth about, you know, all the industries. For example, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, right now most of the pork in the United States is actually owned by a Chinese corporation, where we grow the pork here, we ship it 7,000 miles, we process it in China, and we ship it 7,000 miles back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people, you know, you have to be an economist to figure out, well, gosh, shouldn't that cost a lot more now it's traveling 14,000 miles? In fact, it's cheaper than it's ever been. So why is that? Because when we send things over there, they can process it. Not only does the cost of labor is cheaper, but there's other things that they can put and do that you know, they can bypass certain regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at, you know, your food is not what it, you know, used to be. There's things like meat glues, and my book will describe everything from the eggs, from the seafood. You know, now we introduced, you know, GMO salmon.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
since we don't have the labeling laws of GMO in the United States, you can go to a restaurant and get actually wild-caught GMO salmon now, which is unfortunate, right?
Right.
So what my book is here to do is to tell and teach people how to become smart consumers, really how to read the label, how to ask the right questions. Because if you are eating, quote-unquote, cleaner food, then I want people actually to be getting that. And right now, you know, the industry, like, for example, with grass-fed beef, you need to ask for grass-fed finished beef, because the industry said, well, what's the minimum amount that we need to feed the animal to get the classification from USDA? And that's 3 months. And then they feed the rest of the animal, the rest of its life, corn. So basically they're paying a higher price at these health food markets or these fancy burger shops, and it's basically corn-fed beef still.
Mm-hmm. In your book, you talk about the dangers of using non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs and the black box warning. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So, you know, since most people, you know, as I'm describing, have these inflammatory conditions, right, arthritis down, the common thing that most people in the United States, one-third of the population on a daily basis, reaches for is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, commonly known as like an ibuprofen, or brand name like a Motrin or Advil, or naproxen, which is Aleve, or Celecoxib, which is Celebrex. Those are all non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. The problem with this is that the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories all have what they call a black box warning. Now, my book goes into detail, and this is actually my soapbox and what led me to actually develop a product to be a natural, safer, and clinically effective alternative. But what a black box is the following, is that every drug has what we call a common side effect and a serious side effect. Okay, so when it comes from the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, the common side effects can be heartburn, you know, a little ringing in the ears, a little abdominal, you know, discomfort, some constipation, some fluid retention. You know, these are just simple little things that are not dangerous, but they're common, okay? And then they also can have some serious reactions. And the serious reactions with the NSAIDs are GI bleed, heart attack, and stroke, to name a few. But once any of these serious reactions start occur commonly, meaning any of these serious things that are life-threatening that can kill you occur commonly, then just having heartburn from taking this pill or a little constipation, then the FDA puts out what they call out a black box warning, which means that, in essence, you can end up in the black box. And in my book, I actually will show a little picture of a coffin. Like, this is the black box that they're talking about. And what that means is that more often than not, and as simple as that, is that right now, from taking any non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, which is, again, Advil, Motrin, Celebrex, and Aleve, for example, you can have a heart attack at any time. Even if you have normal cholesterol levels, you can still have a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have high cholesterol levels or any other cardiovascular risk factors, such as obesity, high blood pressure, or diabetes, the risk is even higher. Second thing you can have is a GI bleed, stomach or intestine perforation. It can happen any time, and, more importantly, without any warning symptoms. So the problem with the black box warning is not a factor of how many you take. It's just a factor of you taking it. So if you take one of these pills, you can have a heart attack, a GI bleed, or a stroke at any time without any warning symptoms. Now, the biggest challenge about the black box warning is like the unknown consent that people have not been told about. Meaning, once you open up, you tear open that package, you twist open that cap, or even if you went to the gas station and bought a little pack of two, say, ibuprofen for $1, for example, at the checkout counter for a headache, for example, once you tear open that package, you've accepted the terms and conditions herein, and you've given away all your legal rights that can happen, in which you can end up in the black box. So that should be really shocking to the listeners, because, you know, we're walking around every day. It's kind of like, you know, when you update your phone or your computer, there's this big terms of agreement, and everybody just clicks, I agree. But no one dies from upgrading your phone or your computer. But here, people are dying. And so the number one cause of death in the United States over heart disease, over cancer and stroke is actually medical errors and side effects. And of that medical errors and side effects, the NSAID category is a large component.
That's sad.
It is very sad, you know, because you know, I'm from New Mexico, so and I think it kind of represents most of the United States. Most everybody has a 2,000 caplet bottle that they get at the big box store, and sometimes they get a twin pack for 10% off. And we see that even in the commercials that if you watch, you're a little bit older than me, but if you go back to the 80s, that's I'm a product of the 80s culture, and so when we used to watch like an ibuprofen commercial, for example, we would see someone who was maybe 65 and older, you know, retired, playing golf. Playing with their grandchildren with a little back pain or elbow pain. And that was considered, okay, we know someone was getting older, they're having a little arthritis, they took this over-the-counter pain medication. But now when we see these commercials, same commercial, same brand, we see kids on bicycles and backpacks and skateboards. And so why are children taking these products? It's because they too are also inflamed. And this is, again, due to the standard American diet. Mm-hmm. But we have to be careful because this is no safer in a child. It's actually more dangerous for everybody. Again, it's a factor of you just taking one.
At this time, most people have heard of turmeric and curcumin, but can you clarify, are there differences in these, and what are their real benefits?
Sure. So one of the things that I'm also known for, probably more often than not, is being the curcumin expert in integrative medicine. You know, I've been doing this for 16 years, and so we've been studying, you know, Ayurvedic medicine, which goes back 4,000 years, and I trained in India, is learning about using all of these medicines and spices that we are now researching as important factors. Curcumin comes from turmeric, and turmeric is a rhizome. It's a root, and many people know like curry as the yellow curry, the golden spice is what they call it. We see it like in Thai curry, like, you know, yellow curry for in a Thai restaurant. Mustard has a little bit of turmeric in there just to color it, not for the beneficial properties. But a lot of people understand that they know that of this word turmeric. Out of turmeric, the whole root, there's a small percentage, it's called curcumin. It's about 5% of the plant, and it's been patented how they extract that specifically to get these certain benefits, to make it kind of what's the most important compounds of this plant or of this root. And we now know that in the literature, there's over 7,000 studies on our product, the curcumin C3 complex, that patented extract. There's now over 50 human clinical trials done at universities and hospitals worldwide. Is considered the gold standard of the curcumin extracts. But it's not just putting the amount and it's how it's extracted which makes it beneficial. The studies will now show that it blocks about 97 different mechanisms of inflammation. So it's amazing. In Ayurvedic medicine, it's one of the most powerful things that, you know, in all the Vedic texts that they mention over and over and over. In fact, they have over like 100 different names for turmeric. That's how important it is. But right now, you know, it blocks the same mechanisms that ibuprofen does. It blocks the same mechanisms of the top 10 chemotherapy agents does. It does all these things naturally without causing any of the side effects. In fact, my book will cover for the readers to look at is those people who are undergoing chemotherapy and radiation. It will list which chemotherapies the studies show that it will help actually synergize, making the chemotherapy, the toxic, more targeted, and also help protect some of the side effects. So it's not what we used to do, say, don't take certain things with certain medications. Now we're looking at how do we improve the outcome when you take this medication, because we always want to improve outcome. So the curcumin now that we use is very specific, and we, again, have the most amount of clinical research done worldwide in humans.
I used to take the curcumin, but then after I started taking natural blood thinners, I read that it was a blood thinner. So I decided it probably was not wise for me to be
taking. So actually, that's kind of a misinterpretation of the data. What happened is this. The curcumin is an anti-inflammatory, so it doesn't directly thin the blood like an aspirin or Coumadin or, you know, even ibuprofen can thin the blood. What happens is like this, is that what makes the blood clot is an inflammatory process. So just like even fish oil, you know, people thought, oh my God, you know, when I take an omega-3, is it going to increase my bleeding time? What it does is, since the anti-inflammatory effect slows down the rate of the way the platelets and the fibrin is clotting, is because that's through an inflammatory response. But it doesn't make it more thin. So it's not like an aspirin where you take a baby aspirin. It's 7 to 10 days after you take an 81 milligram baby aspirin that the blood is still, you know, thinning. Okay, what this does, this calms it down to a normal state, so it will not increase your bleeding time. Now, when those people are on like blood thinners like Coumadin and those kind of things like that, yeah, we have to be careful because anything you need to take with those drugs can be an issue. But, you know, over the thousands of patients that we have treated in our office who are on even blood thinners and even the millions of patients who take this worldwide and even eating and consuming their diet, we haven't seen that to be a problem.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, because I take 2,000 of the omega-3, I take 500 of the krill oil, I take 2,000 vitamin C, I take 400, I think, of the vitamin E.
Okay.
There might be
so the vitamin E can be an issue because it's synthetic. We like to give things more what we call tocotrienols.
That's actually what I take. Yeah. I call
right.
it.
Right, so that, that won't have that issue. But the synthetic vitamin E can do that. You know, it's a problem with being synthetic. But, you know, the omega-3s, I have a whole section on my book, how to read the omega-3s, what kind of sources you should be getting the omega-3s, what kind of brands, who does the bottle testing each batch. You know, most 70% official will not make the label claim when they test them on. So they don't have the amount of EPA and DHA that are in that they claim on the bottle. And so we also want to look at, you know, PCBs, dioxins, and even cesium-117 from Fukushima that's being affected in the ocean.
Right.
So, you know, but from our clinical experience, we haven't seen that to be a thinning effect. Although if someone's on a blood thinner, obviously we always monitor, but I haven't seen even patients who are even on Coumadin. As long as we monitor their Coumadin, it's not going to make their INR change. It's other things that interfere with the Coumadin effect or the dosing of them and their absorption in their microbiome that affects their blood thinning effect the most.
Good. Then I'll go back on it. Right. You mentioned that you try to get the best Coumadin you can get. And some things are advertised as more absorbable, new and improved, more bioavailable, et cetera. Are these better than the
curcumin? So, yeah, in the last, say, 10 years, particularly the last 6 years, you see an explosion. You know, turmeric and curcumin is one of the top five health food store, you know, supplements on sale. Because, again, 7,000 studies, right? And so a lot of people are trying to look at how do we make it faster, better, more absorbable. But interesting thing is when we analyze it, I have in my book, we actually take the top brands. So we take the top six brands that people have branded that they see. And we've actually explored when they say 29 times more absorbable, one says 69 times, one says 185 times more absorbable. And we actually analyze the data, and the data will show that they're measuring metabolites in test tubes, for example. And these metabolites now have been shown in the clinical research not to have anti-inflammatory effects. So what happens is they're measuring something that's very high and claiming better absorption, but in fact the efficacy is not there. So more of nothing is still nothing. So when we look at all the data, for example, I'll give you an example. If you take all the branded curcumin extracts that have, you know, have been patented and have some studies, there's about 25 together with all the six or seven different brands out there. And most of them are white papers and they're small little studies. Again, we have 50 human clinical trials and counting. And so we like to stand above the rest. Even when people, and interesting enough, there was a study that just came out recently, and that was published a few months ago. It was called The Strong Anti-Inflammatory Effects of Curcumin. It was published in University of Louisville in Journal of Nutrition and Health Science. And what they did is they took the generic 95% curcuminoids, right? And they tested it in vitro and in vivo for a variety of inflammatory markers and immunological markers. And only the C3 complex that we have in our product shown to have the best anti-inflammatory and immune benefits. In fact, all the other 95% curcuminoid extracts had little to none. And the reason being is because it's not the amount, Carl, of how much they put in. So a lot of people say, oh, well, I'm just buying 95%. Isn't that what it is? It's like, no, because it's how that, what the patent covers is how it's extracted. Right? So you cannot patent a natural product, but you can patent a process. And that's what makes everything different. So just, for example, if you cook your food at your house, how you cook it, although you can say this is a nice salad or this is a nice, you know, this is a nice rice and beans or here's a nice vegan taco, it's how you put those things together. Although the total amount might be the same, what makes all the difference is how you put it together. And so it's the extraction which made a difference. And then actually the study proved what we've known for a long time is that a lot of these products are marketing saying, okay, here's 95% curcumin. Is it similar to what you have in your data? But none of the patients are getting the benefits that they thought.
Great. We also have been hearing a lot about Boswellia and frankincense over the past few years. Can you explain the benefits of Boswellia and what types are best?
Yes. So Boswellia, again, is one of our second famous and most popular thing that we use as part of our formula called Bosmeric, bosmeric-sr.com. And what Bosmeric is that it's, you know, Boswellia comes from frankincense, and everybody knows the religious connotation about the Magi bringing the gift to baby Jesus. You know, we know where those wise men actually were coming from, the frankincense, myrrh, and gold. Gold actually might be referenced now to be more turmeric. I've been talking about this for years. I explained that in my book. The turmeric was more expensive than the gold during the spice trade at that time. But frankincense is important because it has three critical components that we've been able to actually extract in a specific way. It's called boswellic acids. One of them is called AKBBA, and the other one's called polysol. We're the only company that actually has this polysol fraction. What it does is it acts as an anti-inflammatory, but similar to curcumin, it affects a variety of systems, particularly lungs and brain, particularly, which mm-hmm. we had a lot of the best studies from, but a variety of other things like your bones, your joints, and other organs. And there's a synergistic effect between the Boswellia and the curcumin together. So again, it blocks dozens and dozens of pathways naturally with no side effects. But what you see a lot of times is a lot of people are just putting Boswellia extract, which is generic, okay? And there's different parts of the plant, whether it's coming from the gum resin of the tree, the leaves, the bark, or the stems. And so a lot of people, again, are selling the concept of, oh, it's a miraculous herb, even with the companies that sell essential oils. But mm-hmm. the essential oils are not standardized, or they don't contain those fractions that we see in the clinical literature. That's coming from the gum resin. That's the kind that we have patented, and that's the kind that we put in our formula Bosmeric.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great.
So again, you know, what you've seen is there's a disconnect between what's in the clinical literature. So if something's like anti-cancer or anti-inflammatory, and then someone's selling an MLM essential oil, there's a variety in terms of its potency, purity, and safety and efficacy. And so we always want to work moving towards the efficacy outcome, safety outcome, and having the clinical data to support, which we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. You mentioned your product, Bosmeric SR, which also includes ginger and
yes.
bioperine. Can you tell us the benefits of those ingredients and also tell us more about Bosmeric SR? Isn't that a painkiller?
So Bosmeric SR is a formulation of mine. It's kind of our flagship product, which we've been using for about 6 years in our practice. Over probably now 7,000 patients have been taking it, and people taking outside of our clinic as well, mm-hmm. Nationally and internationally. It's what I consider one of the strongest natural dietary supplements for pain and inflammation support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What it does is it takes the patented forms of the curcumin C3 complex, it takes the patented form of the Boswellia and PS that has those three important fractions, and then it takes ginger. Now, we all know ginger is an anti-nausea, anti-inflammatory. We eat it every day in our food, for example, but we extract it so we're able to get the important compound called gingerols, and we have it at 20%. Which is the highest percentage worldwide. No one's been able to come. I think the closest has been 11% that's used in Europe. And so we have the right type of ginger, and then we use bioperine. Bioperine is the patented form of piperine, which is 95% piperine coming from black pepper. Again, it's how it's extracted that makes it important. And the piperine is not only an anti-inflammatory, but it's a bioavailable enhancer. What that means is it makes the curcumin C3 complex in our product absorbable up to 2,000 times better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what we're trying to do is we're trying to make these things improve. It's not only just by itself, but its own efficacy. And there's something with this formula that goes back about 4,000 years with my studying in Ayurvedic medicine. It's a concept called synergy. So Ayurveda understood this, you know, Chinese medicine understood this concept of the synergy. And what we've done is with Bosmeric SR, we've perfected that. We've looked at how to take four key critical ingredients with the specific ratios, the specific potencies, and then how can we have a synergistic effect where the total sum is greater than each of the individual parts. It also has a balancing effect, so it prevents tolerability. So people can take this daily without losing its efficacy. You know, when we used to mm-hmm. just give a lot of curcumin by itself or Boswellia by itself, over a period of time, we'd see that, okay, after about, say, 6 months or a year, some people weren't getting that full benefit as they did initially, just because the body kind of gets used to the same thing. But we now have what we call a balancing effect with the synergistic formula.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the interesting things that we do with Bosmeric SR is not only does it block over 97 different mechanisms of inflammation, we have it in a bilayered caplet. And this is really important for the listeners to understand, because a lot of products they're taking right now that have, say, curcumin or turmeric or a boswellia or a ginger, they will also mix it in a capsule, and they'll usually put another type of ingredient such as a proteolytic enzyme or bromelain or papain, apple cider vinegar, or nattokinase. You'll see those in a variety of products.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what happens when they put it in the capsule, what happens is those enzymes start to degrade the other ingredients of the curcumin or the boswellia.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've been able to do, it took us about 4 years of R&D just to get it so we can do what we call a bilayered sustained-release caplet. So what that means is that each layer is bilayered within itself and then bilayered as a whole. So it prevents the degradation of the ingredients. So 100% of those ingredients are, at the time that you take it, when you take it, going to be there. So most times when you get a capsule, as they manufacture it and it sits on the shelf, by the time they ship it to you, it goes onto your shelf, it goes from the store to your house, there's a degradation. So the potency is decreasing every day over time. And so mm-hmm. we want to ensure 100% efficacy, 100% potency at the time that you take it, and we've been able to do that. With the specific fractions also, we've been able to do what they call a fast-acting, long-lasting effect. So we have a 20-minute onset of action and an 8-hour sustained release. So again, mm-hmm. nobody in the industry has ever done this, taking a natural product, and we're kind of taking the ancient wisdom of Ayurvedic medicine and using the modern technology of pharmacology and processing and manufacturing so we can have like a fast tab, bam, within 20 minutes, your headache, your aches or pains and your allergies are getting better, your arthritis is getting better, your colitis is getting better, your menstrual cramps are getting better, but also it lasts over 8 hours as well.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Then,
one of the things I've mm-hmm. learned, Carl, is that when we look at traditional medicines, and you've been in this field for a long time, so you understand that many of these wonderful herbs that even you took probably through your journey, some mm-hmm. of them, they were very bitter, astringent, some mm-hmm. of them were a little mm-hmm. stinky or spicy and all. And unfortunately, from the American palate, and we don't drink these teas, we don't boil the herbs, we don't sometimes eat these foods, and so there's a lack of compliance even when people see their traditional or
right.
indigenous
mm-hmm.
medicines like Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine. And so our mm-hmm. goal for here is trying to improve the compliance by providing the delivery that the average American, who's like, I've never even had Indian food, I don't even know what these things are, but everybody understands inflammation. Can they take it, and then can they get a benefit within 20 minutes? Yes. Will it last over 8 hours? Yes. And so we're trying to really bridge that gap integratively by using this modern technology, but again, using the ancient wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Even then, with the best of intentions, we still have toxins in our body. Are there effective ways to safely clean these out of the body?
Absolutely. In my book, step 3 is actually detoxification. We like to talk about something called panchakarma, which is a whole other topic in itself, but mm-hmm. we actually are specialists in delivering in Ayurvedic medicine, which is called a detoxification program. A lot of people in America have misunderstood detoxification because it was this the 7-day colon cleanse or some kind of product that they sell at the health food store. It's more complicated than that. It's actually it's a system of treatments that we do.
Mm-hmm.
We individualize the treatments for the patients. It's a lot of mind-body therapies, so it's from massages to steam therapies to even bowel regimens, and we give preparations. Sometimes it takes us almost 5 days for us to prepare even the oils and the concoctions we actually formulate per patient. It's based on their individual mind-body constitution is how we give certain herbs and certain oils, but it's a cleanse. But even though the average person who can't maybe come to our clinic to do that, there's different ways. Just going on a plant-based diet is a way of detoxification because you're getting all those wonderful things. Remember, all the cruciferous vegetables, all these wonderful things help detoxify liver. All these plant foods only improve glutathione naturally in the body, and alpha-lipoic acid. These are things for detoxification. Juicing, even doing some intermittent fasting can do wonders by kind of letting the body calm down and not be exposed to things. Again, try to eat more real, live, fresh foods. And so there's a lot of things that, aside of just taking pills, people can do for detoxification. Even sauna therapies and steam therapies, and there's a lot of different therapies that can be offered. But we like to provide a specialized treatment called panchakarma, which we're also known for.
Mm-hmm. Great. We're getting close to the end, but can you just briefly tell us why you see meditation and yoga as being very important?
Sure. So step 9 in my book, and hopefully everybody will see that I have 10 steps, the definitive guide for preventing, treating, and reversing all disease. There's over 750 references to the scientific journals and investigative reports, which is mm-hmm. all cited there. for their review. But meditation and yoga is key because right now we're learning, trying to put the individual into what we call the parasympathetic state. Mm-hmm. Okay, right now we're too much in the sympathetic fight or flight mode. We're always engaging, as we know, as a country. You know, my book, as you see the front cover, an Inflammation Nation, the country's on fire from all sorts of reasons. Not just the inflammation internally, but it's also the mental and spiritual inflammation that we all have, the tension, the stress. And so one thing that meditation is and yoga is actually preparation for meditation. And what meditation is, just calming of the mind. It's not, you know, it's not a religion. And I go through the book and explaining, you know, the differences of what people sometimes misperceive as being yoga or meditation. But it's something that everybody can do. It's simple. It's free. They can do it in their home. But when you see the clinical studies that have been performed showing all the diseases it can reverse, it even reverses and lowers inflammation just by doing the right type of yoga, the asana, which is the posture, the pranayama, which is the breathing, and even the meditation. It's very, very key. It's very simple. And we can show reducing hospitalizations and reducing, you know, infections, improving immune system mm-hmm. function. So there's a variety, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of studies, and I cite them because once people start to read that, you know, there's a misperception. They think it's just an exercise or, oh, it's just something that I'm sitting in the corner and thinking quietly. But if you know how to do those techniques correctly, we can provide some guidance as well. And there's also a lot of free information that are out there on the internet. Just learning, there's even usually meditation centers you can go to for free in your community. There are wonderful things that you can put people into that parasympathetic relaxation, rejuvenation, which we need to do. That's where the repair, the healing occurs. Right now, we're just too much engaged in this sympathetic overdrive, this initiating, like, I'm going to fight someone. In fact, we actually need to be more in the healing mode.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, Dr. Pai, can you tell us about your books, services, and your products, and how the listeners can locate these?
Sure. So the book is called An Inflammation Nation, and they can go to aninflammationnation.com, and then they can read the reviews. We got a great review by Kirkus and Andrew Wild did the forward. He's one of my mentors that I trained with 16 years ago, as well as a variety of other academics and people who are foremost specialists in inflammation. They can either purchase the book there through Amazon. It's on Kindle. In a few weeks, it'll be on Audible, or they can order through our office on the website. We can get a signed copy for them. They can go to my website, sanjeevani.net. That's spelled S-A-N-J-E-V-A-N-I, sanjeevani.net. And they can learn a little bit more about our clinic, our practice, and our background. It also links to our store with a variety of products like the Bosmeric SR, as well as other things that we have like beta-glucan, glucan 300, L-theanine, and we have probiotics and a variety of products that are listed in our book. But we're really about potency, purity, efficacy, and safety. So we're really specific about what we recommend and how to recommend and how to people to take it. I also offer consultations and health coaching sessions to people worldwide. So we do Skype sessions, and then we can do laboratory testing and looking at which foods trigger the inflammation, do nutrition testing, and I act as a guide to help them along with their primary, their local doctor, on how they can get better from a holistic integrative approach.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much. It's been very, very interesting, and I know it will be helpful to the listeners, and I'm especially happy to hear about your products and how I can locate some of those, because I will be using those also. So I appreciate this very much.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I look forward to seeing you next time. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.